welcome DG and your team. Everybody in the house, you are welcome. We are going to deal with the plastics today, and later on we'll deal with the marine protected areas which were proclaimed recently. We don't do that, gentlemen. Please don't take pictures like that in this meeting, because you are going to disturb us now. The rules in terms of taking pictures don't allow that. You must do it in the way that you are doing it. Taking pictures like that in a meeting. Maybe you should have first ask so that we explain to you how you have to do it. Take those pictures. We are not objecting to you taking the pictures, but in the manner that you are doing from there, it's disruptive of the meeting. Okay. We will deal with the marine protected areas later on in the day. We should be done by 12 at least. We are not dealing with the difficult issues today. And talking about difficult issues, I was just explaining to the DG here that yesterday I was confronted by a gentleman from Working on Fire after the meeting. I nearly thought I was really going to be assaulted, the way that gentleman was so angry. So every time I don't see protection services here, I get worried, because some of the issues that we deal with, they really require that the security must be here, so that if we are blacksmithed, we can then be protected. Because the gentleman yesterday was very, very angry, confronting me even physically. So I thought I must just mention this before we start, because these are some of the issues that we deal with. When we confront the difficult issues, we get that kind of reaction. But I don't think that must deter us. We mustn't stop doing our work, because we are here to cause people to account. And accounting is not easy sometimes. It gets difficult. Emotions can go high. But we mustn't abandon our responsibility. That's why we are here for. That's why we have been elected to come and represent the people in this parliament, to ask the difficult questions and the nice questions, and whatever questions that we have to ask, we are not going to be intimidated by anybody to do what we are supposed to do. In fact, it gives us more strength to continue to probe when we are confronted with those kind of things. So you can easily pick up that there is a problem somewhere, because you have touched a raw nerve. You know, that's why you get that kind of reaction. I think we might have to call them before we go home, because it does point to the fact that we need to scrutinize that Working on Fire quite detail. Okay, Mark, you are alone today. You have to tell us where are your colleagues. Are you ready to take the questions alone? The DG is leaving now at half past ten. Okay, we've got apologies from the minister and the deputy minister. I understand that some cabinet or cabinet committees sitting today. And then Honorable Makubela is still not feeling well. We wish him a speedy recovery. Honorable Tunu is still coming, still on the way. Yeah, Kekana is not feeling well. Nyambi is attending the other committee. I don't know who else. Okay, Honorable Pardon went to Home Affairs. Deployed to Home Affairs or just attending for today? Just for today? Oh, not the committee. Oh, okay. You went to attend to some stuff there. No, I thought he's going to attend Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. All right, those are the apologies we have. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. Mark is going to take us through the presentation and reflecting on the research work that has been undertaken by the branch in the department and the possible steps to be followed, including the public participation processes as well as the what is referred to as SEAS, which is the socio-economic impact assessment that we are required to undertake through the presidency in the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation before we phase out specific products from the economy. So Mark will just touch base on the next steps as he concludes the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues, and those joining us from industry and the public. The presentation today is really focusing on the progress on the regulatory process around the control of certain plastic products that we've been working on for some time together with various stakeholders. A quick introduction, I'll go through some of the policies, legislation, regulations that we've evolved with over a period of time, then go specifically into the plastic carrier bags, the shopping bags as we know them to be, some aspects on how we're dealing with plastic packaging, and then single-use plastic products which are also becoming problematic in the environment, and some reflection on the process going forward. As we know it, in terms of introduction, global plastic use continues to increase by about 4% per annum, currently over 322 million tons produced worldwide. This is a 2015 statistic, but there's a global awareness around plastic and the environment, but we see that in terms of plastic production, it's still increasing. There's different types of plastics. We have about 40 different plastics that are produced globally, and in terms of the global flow of plastics in the oceans, and how they carried across from continent to continent, that carries on to be increasing. Plastic production accounted for about 48% of global fossil use in 2015. It's a polymer that's petroleum based essentially. In South Africa, while South Africa accounts for less than 0.5% of global plastic production, this still amounts to about 1.5 million tons of plastic consumed in South Africa annually. Chair, this slide doesn't look too well here with the lights, but it's really tracking the amount of tonnages of plastic that's produced, domestic virgin plastic consumption in South Africa. Kind of juxtaposed with the percentage growth in terms of contribution to the GDP and percent of manufacturing GDP growth. The message from this slide is that the tonnages production is in good correlation in terms of contribution to GDP. But the message also is that the consumption is increasing, and that is the trend line that we see from 2005 to 2016. Moving on, we also show that in terms of amount of plastics that are being recycled, also an increasing trend with some of the plastics being exported for recycling elsewhere. Like I said, we have about 40 different plastics, some that are easily recycled to others that are more difficult to recycle. Moving on, some facts and figures we thought we'd bring to your attention. In South Africa, we currently have about 1,800 converters, plastic converters, mainly SMMEs. Of all of plastics, 53% of them really goes into packaging. So almost half of our plastic use is really in packaging. The plastics industry currently employs just over 60,000 people, and the earlier statistic we shared, we use over 1.5 million tons of plastic, and out of that we recycle 329,000 tons, and it's what we call recyclate that really goes into other products like the park benches that we see and other furniture. That use pellets and these plastic pellets that also go into making recycled plastics and the recycled plastic bins and so forth. The market size, ex-converter, is about 76, estimated to be about 76 billion rand. In terms of plastic use, a large percentage of it is in rigid packaging, followed by flexible packaging. Furniture, mining, plastic is really used a lot in the automotive industry.
So rigid and what packaging?
So flexible. So the rigid packaging is really those ones you see in the shopping, in the supermarkets that are hard to, you know, compress and whatever. And then you have the flexible packaging, which is the more softer ones, like the bottles, maybe shampoo bottles and other softer kind of packaging that you would have.
Okay.
So we're showing here, Chair, also that plastic has a wide use. And when we talk plastic, often it's in the context of packaging and plastic bags, but there are other uses in building construction, like the PVC pipes, in agriculture, in mining, where certain plastics have to be used, like the polypropylenes and so forth. So we are also saying that there are some of the positive and beneficial uses of plastic outside of those ones that are associated with plastic bags and single-use plastic products. Again, in terms of recycling, I shared approximately 329,000 tons per annum in the recycling industry. The amount of recycling that's produced, employing about 51,000 people. In terms of mechanical recycling, like the shredding and so forth, we have recycling amongst the highest in the world. To share with you one of the statistics that comes out of Petco, last year the collection rate for these plastic bottles here was about 65% end of last year, so it's one of the highest in the world. There are approximately 204 recycling companies, and recycling grew by about 5.9% year on year. What we are saying that a lot of the recycling in terms of mechanical recycling really goes back into recyclate, into new recycling products. There's been little energy that's been derived either from pyrolysis or thermal use of plastics in the energy markets, and also in terms of fuel, very limited commercial extraction of fuels from waste plastics. So this is an interesting study done by Professor Jambek, 2015, that really shows the areas in the world where we talk about plastics that's kind of been mismanaged, and how plastics gets into the oceans and into the environment. So that dark section we see in Southeast Asia, it really shows some of the aspects relating to the vectors and how plastic gets into the environment. There are huge rivers in Southeast Asia that become the vectors and conduits for plastic and waste to get into the oceans there. So those oceans in Southeast Asia, Malaysia, contain some of the highest amount of plastic waste in the world. In South Africa, and this is the statistic that we share coming out of that study, where we show South Africa has about 56% of mismanaged waste. So it's really waste that's in the environment, plastic waste, that could be better managed. Some of the studies shown across the world in terms of oceans that are polluted, it's about 50% of that plastic really comes from within 50 kilometers of the coastline. So we find oceans around the world are being polluted from cities, dense cities and dense settlements very close to the oceans, where after storm events and rainfall events, it's very easy for these products, so waste plastics, to enter the oceans. In terms of our policy process and legislative process, starting in 1998 was the National Environmental Management Act, 2000 the Integrated Pollution Waste Management Policy, in 2003 the plastic bag regulations were promulgated that introduced a plastic bag levy and thereafter controlled the thickness of plastic bags through what is known as a compulsory specification. From the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, the NRCS, that introduced that specification, which is current at the moment. Interesting to note that going forward, we've introduced in the Waste Act a section called Section 28, which is a notice given to the industry to develop industry waste management plans, and in this context, it's the paper and packaging plan. That was a call was made in 2017, and we're busy with the evaluating of those plans, and those plans will also to some extent control the post-consumer waste of plastic and plastic waste in terms of the extended producer responsibility schemes. Moving on in terms of how we address priority plastic products, there's an emphasis on the short-lived plastics and plastic products. So you would know that when you would use a paper cup or a plastic cup, you know, the actual lifespan of that is a couple of minutes. After you finish your coffee and tea, that is the end of that cup. It's in the bin or in the environment, and its lifespan has ended. And the same goes for some of the plastic tableware, earbuds, stirrers. I brought one with me today from the hotel to show you what a stirrer looks like. There's absolutely little use for this after it's done with. And this becomes a real problem in the environment, which is very, very hard to break down. And they say that plastic never breaks down. It just breaks up into millions of pieces of microplastics. So these are the products we're trying to address. So going forward, the philosophy around in our environmental management practices and consumer awareness and lifestyle choices and consumer behavior is really in reuse and recycling rather than having products that have such a short lifespan. And we've presented on this previously, Chair, on the circular economy approach where we extend the lifespan of products in the in its value chain and in its life span so that we have less of these problematic products in the environment. So there are different types of products or plastics, low-density polyethylene that really is used in making of plastic bags, high-density polyethylene, the thicker plastic used as plastic barriers. That's thicker, the polyethylene terephthalate, PET, which is the plastic that's used to make the beverage bottles, polypropylene, which is a softer plastic. The cap on this plastic bottle is actually polypropylene. Then we know polystyrene, what that is. Polyvinyl chloride, or PVC, is a softer plastic. Some of the shampoo bottles that are made out of this plastic. Some of the cling wrap that's made out of this plastic. And obviously some of the plumbing pipes, PVC pipes that made from this plastic as well. There's an emerging introduction of what we call bioplastics. And worldwide, there's a move to what they call sustainable plastics. Is there such a thing as sustainable plastics? We are involved, I think DG yourself, in the OECD discussions and dialogues around the future of plastics and what would be called sustainable plastics and bioplastics, short-lived plastics, plastics that can decompose very quick, compostable plastics that can be used or also very quick to decompose in the environment. And we've been seeing some introduction of those by some of the retailers. Again, the issue of whether these raw materials are available in South Africa is another question, and to what extent, you know, we're going to introduce or start promoting a huge import of them. And then, of course, it's the economic impact of these replacements or alternatives, alternative plastics. Coming back to our current situation around the plastic bag, an MOU that was signed around 2003 and the plastic bag regulations that were introduced in 2003. We also have a standard, South African Bureau of Standards, national standard for garbage bags and bin liner, the so-called black plastic bags, garbage bags, that also has some standards around. So currently there's a standard for the thickness of the carrier bag and also for the recyclability of the black bin bag. In terms of our consultative process that I'll go through in a moment, in terms of how we address the use of plastic bags, there's a heightened awareness in the world and in the country in terms of you know, considering the further use of plastic bags. You've seen in shopping stores now and supermarkets alternatives for the reusable polypropylene bag or the recyclable plastic bag. The notion that we should introduce reusability rather than recyclability or compostability, and those are some of the issues we are dealing with in our consultative workshops around what would be the regulatory controls around the plastic bags. Should there be phase out, then what would be the phase ins of alternatives, and what would those be, what would be the standards for them, and how would we control even replacement of these bags? Should there be replacements, would there be an alternative for a plastic bag as we know it? Chair, I'll just show you very quickly here in terms of some of the economic impact in terms of the revenue derived from the levy that was introduced in 2005, starting off at 3 cents, 2017, 8 cents, and the current levy that is charged on a plastic bag by SARS is 12 cents. But what we pay for these bags at the supermarket, they can range from 55 cents to 65 cents. So the difference goes to the retailer, to the retailers, and in terms of that, there was supposed to have been some infrastructure around the recycling and awareness created on the recycling of these bags. We show you general revenue increase. At the same time, we show you some kind of correlation in terms of the amount of plastic bags.
So is that something that that's regulated?
The levy is regulated, yes, Chair.
Yeah, it's 12 cents, but as to what industry adds on that is not regulated.
That's not regulated. It's the Retailers Association.
Retailers. So they put their own price in there. Okay.
So, Chair, the message from this slide is that if we have to ask the question, does the levy make any impact on the amount of plastic bags that are used and purchased by society? question that we are discussing in our workshops as well. If we have to double the levy, will people still pay? Will the housewife still pay 1 rand for a plastic bag? If we triple that, quadruple that, say we charge 4 rand for a plastic bag, will people still pay 4 rand for a plastic bag? So the question to ask is that the economic impact of creating a disincentive, is it really working? And these are some of the issues we are dealing with in our consultations with industry and the public at large in terms of influencing the policy direction. So to increase a levy, maybe still people will still pay, and so you're not addressing the problem. Should there be another regulatory instrument to deal with the plastic bags? These are some of the regulatory options I'm going to come to in a moment.
Okay. So before 2005,
there was no levy.
Before the levy, plastics was free, no? Plus the carrier bags.
Yes.
Okay.
They were free and flying around.
National flower.
They were the national flower because there was no incentive to recycle at the time. So at least what has changed with the plastic bag levy is that those materials can be recycled. Now the question is whether we are effective or the management system for making sure that we avoid having plastics still as part of the general waste in the municipal collection system. That's more what we need to try and sort out. But the industry has transitioned in terms of the materials as prescribed according to the new standards. Thanks.
Thanks, DG. So moving on, Chair, the next slide, really another one in terms of, you know, behavior, impact, number of bags. And here we show that around 2008-2009, there was a drop in the amount of bags purchased. We're not sure. That could be related to the economic slump at the time. Another increase, we tailed off 2014. We seem to be stabilizing at the moment with a reduction in 2017. So these are kind of up and down, but I'm given to understand that maybe there's a kind of stabilization or reduction in the amount of bags that's being purchased with new alternatives that retailers are putting out, including reusable bags. And from some quarters as well, there's been calls for, like here in the V&A waterfront, for shoppers not to use bags, so to refuse a bag. And there's been a number of shopping malls across the country where shoppers have been urged not to ask for a bag or bring your own bag, and so reduce the amount of bags that eventually goes out into the environment. So we now move on to the regulatory options in terms of our current research, our current studies, our workshops with industry and the public around looking at the options. We commissioned a few studies that we brought to this committee last year. It was the plastic material flow study that we commissioned in 2017 that gave us an idea in terms of material use and how we address the whole product design aspect right at the top in terms of materials that are used and how they affect the circular economy and things that eventually carried into the oceans like the microbeads and microplastics that I'll deal with in a moment. We're currently doing a study on the review of the implementation of plastic bag policies, and we're sharing with you the current work that we are doing with various universities and also involving the public and the industry. The most recent one, I think, that was held last week. So, Chair, what we're looking at in terms of the research and some of the studies that are coming out is how do we look at alternatives, and if we have to look at the better management of plastic bags, either through a reduction process, a phasing out type of process, what would we do in terms of certifying alternatives, and how would we go about controlling these alternatives, a large amount which have to be imported into the country. And then talk about the biodegradable aspects of it, the compostable aspects around it. So the compostable bags that are currently being introduced, I think, by Pick and Pay and others, it is a PLA plastic. It's a polylactic acid plastic, which has its origin in cornstarch, which comes from the food industry. And a lot of that raw material is not available in South Africa. There's an alternative for paper bags, and you've seen in terms of the large takeaway outlets like McDonald's, Tears, KFC, Burger King, all of them have replaced the plastic bags now with paper bags. Some of them still have plastic straws and plastic spoons, but possibly that's the next phase to be addressed. The other one is photodegradation bags, bags that would degrade under sunlight and UV light and disintegrate in the environment over a period of time. Option two is then to address the issue around the fillers in these bags. What is a period of time where industry, in order to meet the thickness requirement, they were using calcium carbonate filler. Just to achieve the thickness requirement. But in terms of recycling these bags, they were becoming a major problem in terms of how these calcium carbonate fillers affect recycling. We've been assured by industry that this has been addressed and the problem really has been managed at the moment, but we are thinking of introducing some kind of regulatory control so that we don't have a recurrence of this problem. The other one I mentioned briefly was the issue of microbeads and microplastics that really comes through exfoliants and scrubbers that are used in cosmetics, in toothpaste and other products that really goes right through the wastewater treatment plants, straight into rivers, straight into the oceans with millions and billions of pieces of these microbeads in the ocean. And it's not only in South Africa, it's all over the world, I think with the highest being in the United States as well. So we are working with the Cosmetics Association together with the Department of Health and looking at how we could start tightening up in terms of the regulations passed by the Department of Health to better control these microbeads. There was a presentation done previously here, Chair, by the WRC, where they are continuing with their studies in terms of assessing the amount of microbeads in the environment and also in fresh water. Option two is for us to look at the exploring the option of promulgating regulations under NEMA. So you know some things like asbestos regulations, they are actually promulgated under NEMA. There is an option that we could look at a regulation, but these are some of the options that are being discussed, and if we use this option, we'll have to go in a full consultative public process where we'll have to publish a notice and call for consultation and public participation on this. And obviously option three on for microbeads is that if we can't do option one and option two, the issue here is that we'll have to be really looking at the diffuse source of controls, which is very, very hard, and you're talking about things like ultrafiltration, which is very expensive at the wastewater treatment works.
So, but this cosmetics, are they, these microbeads, are they really working?
You should ask the ladies, Chair.
what? Because they are very popular in the spas, in the beauty industry, they use all of these things. Okay.
Yes, yes. I think there are alternatives. I think some of them use salt and some use sugar as well. Exfoliants, yeah.
And mud.
You have to go back to the traditional remedy, mud.
Okay.
And stones, eh? I'm almost done, Chair. In terms of the call on the industry waste management plans for the paper packaging industry, we just quickly make a notes there in terms of what is excluded, what we mean by packaging and what is excluded. So the big shipping containers, big bulk packaging containers, packaging made from timber and textiles, and the big industrial bulk containers in excess of 1,000 liters, these are not included in the packaging definition. We're really looking at post-consumer packaging, which is the problem. So this is the last section of this presentation where we talk about the single-use plastic products, which have a very short lifespan and becoming a real problem in the environment. Earbuds, straws, stirrers, plastic and paper cups, tableware, plastic spoons, forks, knives, and of course the polystyrene packaging. We started and we produced a discussion document that we shared with a number of stakeholders, and we are in the process of inviting comment around it. And I think we presented previously on this in terms of what would be the replacements. Are there replacements for these? We know to some extent there have been some replacements of the plastic straws with paper straws, and I'm not sure if everybody likes it. After a while, the paper straw does get a bit wet, and then you're sucking nothing. And of course, you know, what are some of the replacements? There's bamboo straws, there's stainless steel, reusable straws, and all kinds of replacements. But a lot of consumer awareness and heightened awareness on refusing the straw. There's been some programs called The Last Straw, Ditch the Straw, Refuse the Straw. And so a lot of restaurants and food and restaurant chains are actually do not give straws out, and they would ask you if you want a straw. But a heightened amount of consumer awareness now in terms of refusing these straws. The same goes for earbuds. In our beach cleanups, we find lots of them. The same goes for stirrers. Is there really a need for stirrers and so forth? So, Chair, the way we are prioritizing this, we've identified those five as a priority products, single-use products that we need to address. And we are doing this in the matrix where we look at these products. What is the compostable alternative availability of an alternative, column one? The cost of this alternative, column two? The market readiness in terms of availability in South Africa, and we are really quantifying every aspect of this to look at the market readiness in terms of we don't want to unnecessarily introduce something where we're going to really skew markets and people are going to be out of work and the issues around jobs and all of that, and we are working very closely with the industry on it. So on all of them, the status is that we are still in consultation with industry, consumer groups, and the retailers on how we could phase down, phase out, or ban these products, and what would be the replacement and alternatives for them. Last two slides is really looking at the stakeholders that are involved at government level, National Treasury, the Department of Trade and Industry, SARS, Science and Technology, Department of Health, all of the provincial departments, environment, municipalities, our Waste Management Bureau. We are heavily engaged in the industry, talking to Packaging South Africa, Plastics SA. I think our CEO is here today. Petco also is here today. The Cosmetics Toilets and Fragrant Association, that are talking to us about the how to address and manage microbeads. Recyclers, importers, exporters, manufacturers, retailers, really all of society in terms of how we address these problematic products. There's a huge amount of research that's been done by the CSIR and others, the WRC as well, that's informing the study going forward. So finally, in terms of the regulatory process, like I said, it's with the Department of Health on the microbeads. We've been undertaking a separation of waste at source guideline, which we've discussed heavily in the provinces, and we're ready in terms of providing this guideline to municipalities. This would help a lot in terms of how the separated recyclable fractions can be reused and go back to source and back to the factories that could be used as recycled back into a process for making new products. Then, of course, it's the industry waste management plans I spoke about and the process that's unfolding there. And the regulatory controls and options we have through notices and other regulations on how we could address these single-use plastic products. Last slide, Chair. We are looking at revisiting the 2003 plastic bag regulation and the standard for fillers, like I mentioned, and there's ongoing work with the National Treasury on the implementation and effectiveness of the South Africa's plastic bag policies and what would be the policy direction going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mark. Do you have an idea of the breakdown of well, the levy is at 12 cents now, but the retailers, for instance, Woolworths, will be, I don't know, between 40 and 50 cents. So, do you have an idea of the breakdown of that? How much goes into recycling? How much goes into, well, it's 12 cents that goes to SARS? How much goes into the cost of producing that plastic, and then how much goes into the actual profit of the retailer? Do you have that breakdown? Because surely if it's something that SARS can be asked to look into, if we've got the breakdown of that.
Thanks, Chair. We don't have that kind of breakdown. I've just showed an estimate of the revenue that comes from recycling of plastic, 76 billion. The 12 cents, we can get that number from SARS, but the other amounts, the revenue from the sale of plastic bags, that we don't have that. We can get that from the Retailers Association and come back to you with that figure.
Okay, because you see the problem is that retailers might be making a lot of markups on this plastic, the carrier bags, and it's something that really has to be looked at, has to be regulated, so that it's an easy target for a source of income for the retailers. Because the price is not regulated, and the South African consumer behavior is such that people don't go to the shops with the carrier bags, so they are forced to buy plastics when they arrive there. Even if you can come up with a campaign to say, please don't buy plastics, but when you buy a lot of stuff, what are you going to use to carry them? Unless you push a trolley up to your car. What if you are taking a public transport? What are you going to do? So there are practical things that would make people to buy the plastic carriers. And I see that it's not one of your priority in terms of the single-use plastic products. I don't know whether the plastic carrier bags are not that problematic. But I would have loved to also see it here, yeah, to see how we can prioritize its ultimate extinction. Because, is it the first? I'm looking at this. Before this one. Okay. Okay, members, do you have some questions on this, Honorable Steenkamp?
Thank you, Chair. Mark, thank you very much. I have a couple of questions. The first one is your global plastic use, the stats that you gave there, the worldwide one, Is there any chance that we can get a more recent one? The reason for it, why I'm asking, is because there's been, you know, more awareness worldwide on plastic use, specifically because I see it's from 2015. If it's a local one, I think it will give us a better idea of the direction that we as South Africa, that we're going in. Okay, looking at the tonnages where you said that there's like basically a 1.5 million tons consumed within South Africa, which is very recent, but the recycled and as well as the diverted is the same amount, I guess it's the same thing, which is just over 300,000 tons. My question there, what is the department doing to make sure that the consumed amount and the recycled or diverted amount gets closer together, if that makes sense? Okay, so on the different plastic uses, what is the chance that we could get some, or that we could get, or force actually, let's use the word, companies such as, you know, the Coke company, or the guys that make the Andy bottles, or whatever, to force them to take responsibility for their products post-use? Not necessarily full responsibility, but to come to the table and say, listen, yeah, this is the issue, you need to, you know, also come, sorry, Siri. Okay, and then there's a slide, I think it's slide 8, that you said that the introduction to recycling, that recycling grew by 5.9%. What's the time period from when to when? Also, because I see it is in 2016, I'd be quite interested to see if it's grown even more, again, because there's been so much, you know, people have been made aware of these kind of things worldwide as well. On the plastic waste inputs from land into ocean, I see that's quite interesting, actually. But I see it is a 2010 stat. So would South Africa still be in that orange? Are we moving up or down? What's the trend there? Okay. Then what I actually want to know is if you say phase out, ban, whatever that means, or whichever direction, what is the economic impact going to be? Specifically when you look at jobs. We're currently in an economic state where we are losing jobs in South Africa, and I would hate for it to have an effect on that. People are losing jobs anyway because the economy is in a state. If we do something now and we lose 100, even 100 jobs, but this will be thousands if my estimates are correct. Just the impact thereof. Also, you've spoken a lot about separated source before. Is that part of the plan and your interactions with industry? If you could just give us a little bit more, as well as the specific, maybe some details on where you are with regard to speaking to municipalities on forcing people, I hate that word, but I've used it like 4 times already, but forcing them literally to separate at source. Because I think that's the only way that we're really gonna go somewhere is if we recycle, and you can't really recycle if you already clean and separate it at home. You said that the biodegradable and compostable, I don't know, plastic bags, that the raw materials are not available in South Africa. What is the chance that we can make that available in South Africa? Because, I mean, again, you want to grow the economy, you want to create jobs, you don't want to just keep importing if I just don't see it as a long-term solution if we're going to keep importing. The microbeads, just for interest sake, and I don't know if you will know, but are there any manufacturers of microbeads within South Africa? Or is it already in ready-made products when coming in? Or are we importing the microbeads itself? Let me quickly see. Oh, and then last one, assessment and regulatory control on single-use plastic products. Like you said that you're in consultation and you're talking to industry, etc. Is there a time frame to the assessments, the consultation, you know, what before we'll get anything on paper? Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies, Chair. Chair, I think all of us understand that the regulation of the use of plastic products is crucial, and we know that plastic is a major threat to our planets and oceans and also just to human health. That one is understandable. But when we look at the prioritized single-use plastic products on your slide 20, my issue is the issue of job opportunities, because there are people who are employed to make those products. Whether if we do these things, do we have a plan of saying we can move from this, for instance those containers that we call laptops in townships, to something else that is
what
more.
What is it called?
It's laptop.
Laptop.
Yeah, that one.
Oh,
yeah, the polystyrene thing, yes. We call it a laptop. So when you buy for your event or it's a funeral or what, you buy the laptops. So if there is an alternative, if we think along those lines, it would be better, because we don't want to lose more jobs. Secondly, my issue is on the initiatives of the department. We know that the word recycling is out there, but in maybe also it is understood by people who are in the sector who do most of this recycling. I was just thinking, because there is another informal settlement near my home, Kondeni. It's a Saka informal settlement. Although we have managed to clean, because we have sourced resources from the municipality to assist, but generally there is a lot of plastic, and I think we need to have a targeted program in informal settlements, not only that one, but I think it is what is prevalent in most informal settlements. They don't know what impact, or just don't really take that into cognizance that it has got far-reaching implications of just throwing plastic and all of that without maybe recycling or having a program that will ensure that that one, the waste is limited. The last one, Chair, is on waste management. I just wanted to ask the department or the Waste Management Bureau, whether are we doing enough or in terms of waste management generally? Because in most cases, it is this discarded material that ends up in oceans and what in all other places. So in that area, if we reflect, do we think that we are doing enough in terms of us managing the waste that we have? Our people, are they also educated in relation to that? I was also of the idea that even now in our homes, because in our kitchens, you know, at home, we produce a lot of waste. So we will need to have two bins now, where we put plastic and the other one is for just general general waste, so that this one we can take where recycling or wherever, because we don't mind, we just, everything we put here. But at the end of the day, even where these things are being discarded, you realize that this plastic still remains here and it becomes an eyesore. It affects our health. It's a problem. So I do agree with you that there is something that needs to be done. I'm not sure whether the one of increasing the tariff will assist, because it's not, we are not getting, I don't know, I don't see a difference. Plastic used to be free in the past, but even now that we are buying it, there is no difference. Maybe also the issue of awareness. We must talk about these things all the time. You know, when something is always in your ear, you see this, then you begin to take an action. I think as a department also, we also need to look in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Chair. I'll deal with the Honourable Member's last comments, Member Nkuti. On the replacements, like you indicated for the laptops and the other ones, I think, you know, what we show in the slide here is that we are really very cognizant of the impact it's going to have on jobs, on the economy, on markets, on industry that's involved in this. And we have quite a matrix of how we do that. And so I don't think we're doing the knee-jerk thing of just the banning or phasing out. What I shared earlier was that they are already consumers are getting more conscientized and mobilized around it, and there are voluntary programs already by some of the retailers, by some of the restaurants and food outlets to phase them out or ban them from their facilities themselves. What impact it's going to have on industry is really what we are forced to do in terms of what is the SEERS or the socio-economic impact assessment that we have to do on any regulation and policy that we put out, and that study and that information will come to the committee before we pronounce on any regulation going forward. So there will be a full comprehensive socio-economic impact on the policy direction that we will take on the replacements and alternatives to the single-use products. At the same time, you know, I must say that, you know, there's been global awareness. Besides what's happening in South Africa, the whole world seems to be moving away from certain plastics, and the global companies and global food outlets like the McDonald's and all of that, they are also setting and raising the bar. We have our own retailers, you know, peer pressure amongst our own retailers that's, you know, causing them to go for alternatives and all of that. And some of the global brands are also moving in that direction. So sometimes without us necessarily, you know, doing a regulation and a policy, because of the global pressure, some of the global brands are already introducing alternatives and all that. But it's going to take consumer awareness, consumer pressure, and the kind of regulatory pressure and alternatives and the policy direction that must be carefully looked at before we come up with the final option. I like your question around education and awareness, and I also ask myself constantly how much of awareness is enough awareness. Education and awareness, Honourable Chair, we will be doing for a long time. And, you know, we ask the question, you know, who are the people that are most wasteful when it comes to energy, when it comes to electricity, when it comes to littering? And sometimes you want to blame the kids, but actually they're not the problem. Sometimes it's the youngsters and adults that are throwing stuff out of the cars and vehicles and all of that. And you have to ask the question, don't these people know they're not supposed to litter? So awareness we will be doing for a long time. And awareness can't only come from government. It's from all sectors of society. We work heavily in the basic education and school system, around curricula, around climate change, around consumption, production, sustainable development. That includes the notion of, you know, resource efficiency and littering. But it's a societal problem, and you know, you either address it in two ways. One is the regulatory way, thou shalt not do this, or else. Or you have to do it the economic way, which is an incentive. And you create incentives for that. And so when it comes to the household, where do we start? At a household level, where you say correctly, there's a lot of waste being produced at household level. What kind of controls will we have to put in place at household level to regulate the amount of waste that's produced from households, or to segregate waste in different fractions? So I said we developed a guideline already called the Waste Separation at Source Guideline. In terms of how we implement it in a regulatory fashion is directly related to the readiness of a municipality to do it in an enforcement and compliance manner. So for instance, give an example, if a municipality has to force it on its households, and then we have all the regulated, we have all the separated fractions, either two bags or three bags. Some municipalities, they have voluntary programs like in Johannesburg and Durban, I think in Cape Town as well, where they, in some of the suburbs they run programs to separate waste into recyclable waste versus non-recyclable at different color bags and all of that. The question is that, are the municipalities organized in terms of their back-end infrastructure to now deal with the separated waste fractions? And I always use the example, when I lived in Cape Town many years ago at my house here, we did separate our waste into different colors, recyclable, non-recyclable, glass, whatever. The municipality came, took all three and put it into one truck and went and disposed it in the landfill site. So the municipalities have to be organized as well. And there we talk about the notion of recycled and sorting centers, materials, recovery facilities, transfer stations, and how we close the gap from the curbside, from the household to the landfill, and what are the incentives, disincentives, regulatory options and schemes you will use to divert more and more waste away from landfills. Question, are we doing enough? And I don't think enough is enough. When you look at the state of our cities, our streets, the face of waste, not enough is being done. And so we try and explain in various ways to look at what government can do from a pressure regulatory point of view. The stick, there's the issue of the carrot, there's the issue of awareness, education, there's the issue of infrastructure and the cost of infrastructure that must go in at a municipal level, at a collection level, at the polluter pays level, and at the precautionary level, at an engineering level, at wastewater works, at a diffuse source level, and the work that my colleague Judy Beaumont here is doing on the source to sea project that we've initiated in the country. And so there's got to be a multidisciplinary approach to this, a multifunctional approach, a multi-sectoral approach. It's going to take a collaborative effort, a combined effort of all sectors and spheres of society to address the problem of waste. Just to come to Honorable Steenkamp, in terms of the most recent data, I'll have to check with the colleagues and see where we are. But suffice to say, in some of our international engagements in the OECD and in the BRICS, the amount of plastic that's produced globally is increasing on a year-by-year basis. And suppose that trends with the economic growth and population growth. So the increase in population will be directly proportional to the increase in the amount of waste in the world. In South Africa, again, I've got to look at the number, but we do say that about 1.5 million tons is being diverted. And your key question in terms of how do we look at the source. So at a production level, at a manufacturing level, in terms of the polymers and the materials that's going into these products versus the amount that's being diverted eventually. And I think the trick here is that when we talk about recyclate, an amount of recyclate, an amount of material that must be recycled back into products to stop the amount of virgin material that's being used. So our discussions with the manufacturers, like on this one, which is PET, there's only three or four manufacturers. It's Sasol, BASF, Osa Fibers, and I think there's one more And if we could regulate, in fact, on the raw material, and I think we've shared previously how you can actually regulate on raw materials, like the resin that goes into this, we could deal with a problematic waste stream by dealing with four people or four companies. When you talk about post-consumer waste, we have extensive negotiations, consultations with Coca-Cola. So you've seen on the Velpro bottle, there's a recyclate standard and target there. We're constantly raising the bar with bottlers and extruders to start increasing the amount of recyclate content in products. Soon, through the Industry Waste Management Plan, we'll be regulating and we'll be enforcing recyclate targets. For instance, the initiatives that we've been working on with Coca-Cola is in terms of reintroducing the deposit return scheme for bottles. So there's three different types of bottles. You get reusable bottles, you get returnable bottles, and you get recyclable bottles. So all three of them, we got to find the best economic way of getting back recycled materials into the value chain and how to stop and divert more and more of these bottles away from landfills. The number 5.9%, I'm just going to check on that, but my understanding it's an annualized figure year on year. Just to show you the big number globally, the question is asked, how much of plastic is being recycled globally? It's only about 9%. A large amount of plastic gets out of into the environment, and a lot through these vectors I call the Southeast Asia that we saw in that slide, where a lot of plastic gets lost into the environment through these huge rivers that goes through huge, huge dense settlements. Then moving on, Chair, very quickly to look at the economic impact on jobs. I think I have shared on that. Talk about how we're going to force the separation at source guideline on municipalities that will be ready to implement in terms of, and then a compliance and enforcement measure together with the readiness in terms of infrastructure that will be able to deal with the recycled fractions and alternatives. On microbeads, I also have to just follow up on that to find out exactly whether these microbeads are made in South Africa or they come in made as raw material from outside of the country. My understanding is that a lot of the toothpaste should be manufactured in South Africa, but I'll have to get back on that. The last question, Chair, then, is on the time frame. We hope that all of these studies will be nearing conclusion by the end of this year and by the end of next financial year, March 2020. We'll be coming out with a regulatory framework and policy direction of how we're going to control the single-use products, including plastic bags. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. The Industry Waste Management Plan around paper and packaging, how far are we with that?
We received about 13 plans that came in at the deadline end of last year. We've concluded the government evaluation. We've concluded the department's evaluation. We're busy talking to Treasury on some of the ways we're going to look at how these plans are going to be funded, together with looking at some of the legal implications following certain court rulings recently. But we hope to conclude on them before the end of this financial year in terms of our APP commitments. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. All right. We're also using some, yeah? Mm-hmm. Lots of plastic, yeah? Yeah, maybe we must start with Parliament, yeah? Mm-hmm. Educate the powers that be here about the single-use plastics. Well, I was interested in the question that you posed, Mark, about who is wasteful generally in society, who generates a lot of waste. And I just want to make an example about my experience having lived in a rural area and in an urban setting. In a rural area, very less amount of waste that gets generated. Of course, I don't know, maybe it's because of the fact that there's no management in terms of collection of waste and so forth. We find ways, very innovative ways in rural areas of disposing of waste, but very less waste generated in rural areas. And you go to the township, it generates more waste than in a village. You get a bin, you get supplied with a bin if you stay in a township. And then you move to the suburb, you get two bins and bigger ones than in a township. And all those bins gets full every week. They are collected weekly by the municipality. So you can see the generation of waste between the poorest areas and the more affluent areas. The poor can generate a lot of waste. It's the rich that does that, or the affluent. Let me refer to it as such. So from the township, and then to the suburbs. So the more affluent society is, or a segment or a class of society is, the more waste they generate. So if you want to tailor-made your programs on education, you know who to target. Those who are staying behind the high halls, the more affluent areas. So those are the people that must be targeted in terms of educational interventions about the fact that the behavior around consumption that needs to avoid plastic, because plastic indeed it's having an impact on the environment, in the oceans generally. So, and then the argument, I didn't hear you answering the question about jobs. How do we balance on the one hand preserving the jobs that are there, because unemployment is a big problem in our country. On the other hand, protecting the environment and introducing measures that will reduce the use of plastics, single-use plastics. I didn't hear you coming out very clear on that one, because I also have got a comment to make as part of closing the meeting. Do you want to say something?
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. Sorry if I wasn't too clear there, but what I said was that we are working with industry in terms of what would be the economic impact on industries together with jobs. So to give an example, if there's about 60,000 people that's employed in that industry that's making the current shopping bags, looking at how they would be, for instance, re-employed in a sector that would be making compostable bags, and it's the same production lines using a different material. So in terms of loss of jobs, we've got to really work with the sector to get the DTR and others to say that, yes, if we have to go down the route of either phasing out the current bags or banning those bags, what would happen to those jobs? Will they be able to be re-employed in similar production lines? And the answer may be yes, but that we are consulting industry on. But in terms of loss of jobs, we think that this is an issue that we really, it's out of our space at the moment, and we have to consult with DTR and the industry directly on this matter.
Okay. Yeah, maybe the alternatives, to investigate whether alternatives are not going to also generate the same amount of employment opportunities that gets generated by by producing these plastics. There are smaller countries in Africa. In fact, the world is moving towards banning. We are talking about reducing. But many countries around the world are moving towards banning. Even the small countries in Africa with a small economy, they're banning the use of single-use plastics. We know the figures, we mentioned them during many a times, even the last time when you came, Mark, we did refer to those countries that successfully banned the use of plastic. And I just wonder what was the impact on the jobs that were there. But I think the alternatives, the space opportunities there for employment creation around the alternatives. I mean, some retailers have already replaced the straws, the plastic straws. They've used, they're now using paper. Well, it's fine, you can use it, only if you don't take forever, because then it's gonna give you problems. But if you take few minutes to finish off your drink, it's quite effective as a plastic straw. Yeah, you can, but those who has used the straw, you can use the paper straw, and it's as effective as a plastic, only if you quickly finish off your drink. But if you leave it there forever, of course, plastic paper will do what paper does when it's inside water. Yeah, but I think you need all the interventions that you need, educational, engage with industry to change. But ultimately, I think we also have to consider this a move towards banning the use of single-use plastic. I can tell you that if we do that, as this generation of Mark and everybody else in the house, I can tell you that that will bequeath our future generations to come with a legacy, because they will not have to grapple with these products going into the sea, damaging our oceans, our species there in the oceans and so forth, because we did receive a presentation about the impact that this does in the ocean. And if we ban this, not only ourselves, but acting in concert with other countries, I think that will be the biggest legacy that we can bequeath to the next generation. It is a problem, and I'm sure industry will also move towards something else that can generate them the income. But I'm just a little bit worried about this levy that has been added on, and retailers are making a profit out of that. They're actually making a killing, because it's a soft target. You just add in whatever number there. I think the department working with the treasury must investigate how you regulate that, because the intention of introducing the levy in the first place, plastic used to be free. Now you introduce the levy of 3 cents to make sure that you encourage recycling, but also use that as a disincentive for people to buy. But as I said, I mean, when you go into the shop, you are walking to the taxis, you have to carry whatever that you have bought on something. And it is not always that you are walking around with a carry bag, you know. So people are going to buy that. So that is an area where I think industry, the retailers in particular, are making a killing. So if we can ask the department to follow up and see how they can regulate that space. But otherwise, it has been a very good engagement. Welcome, Honorable Pedder. We did receive your apology. We hope everything went well at Home Affairs. thank you, Mark. All right, we are done with this one. Can we get a good story on the marine protected areas? Hope is going to be a good story. Forgot your name, you know, you can't believe it. Judy.
Thank
Judy,
you.
Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. I am here with Mr. Thobani Popoz. He is the director responsible for our work on marine protected areas, among others. Chair, yes, indeed. I think we have a good story. it's a story, however, that requires ongoing work and focus. you will recall that in October last year, Cabinet gave approval for the network of 20 marine protected areas to ensure 5% protection of South Africa's ocean environment. And this followed an extensive process of consultation and engagement and discussion that was started in 2014. When the then Minister of Environmental Affairs, together with her cabinet colleagues, endorsed the plan to achieve as part of Operation Pakisa Ocean's Economy a viable marine protected area network. So, Chair, the work that we are presenting today will be an overview of the process that was followed in the consultation on confirming, defining, and securing these additional 20 marine protected areas that would contribute and make up 5% of protection of our ocean environment. We have two presentations and one pamphlet. The first presentation provides an overview of the process that has been followed. The second presentation is a detail on each of the marine protected areas. So we're calling it a virtual tour. It's almost a tour on what is important for each of the marine protected areas, why it is that that area has been selected. And we hoped, Honorable Chair, that we would have time to go through that. It would not take very long. And then the third part of our documentation is what we have just circulated, which is a pamphlet that focuses on the benefits of marine protected areas, and we'll touch on those in the presentation. So if I may, I'd like to hand over to